All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NFL podcast. It's Friday, November 30th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
Oh, it's a game-by-game breakdown for Week 13, and we're dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. And as always, the podcast listener, you go over to dfsr.com/deals, and it's going to get you a discounted rate, the special deal just for the podcast listener. So optimal lineups for FanDuel, DraftKings, NFL, NBA as well, premium articles, premium chat. It's all covered under one subscription package. One of the best deals you're going to find in the entire industry. So go check that out. DFSR.com/deals. We'll get you started. 3 or 7 days, and there's $24.95 a month after that, and you are good to go. Buddy, week 13. Well, first of all, somehow in the old anything can happen in football, the Cowboys pull off the win against the Saints, which automatically sends everyone to a tizzy because people are like, the Saints are maybe on the path to the Super Bowl. Now the Saints stink. Like, is the overreaction culture in NFL just too much? Like, I get that one game and you put up 10 points and you're supposed to be a prolific offense and whatever. Does one game take a guy like Breeze from, like, possible MVP candidate status to just off the radar? Because I see, like, I want to say they're crazy overreactions, and I don't know if they are or they aren't. It's so hard for me to evaluate these things sometimes.
No, I think you can write him off. I think he's done.
Really? I mean, I can't tell if you're kidding.
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's just, this is the issue with the NFL in general. It's like, everything is hyper-focused in on one single game, and while the NFL is not baseball, like, there's certainly less variance on a game-to-game basis than a game like baseball, there's still plenty of variance to go around, and bad bounces here and there, and there's a snowballing effect when, bad things start to happen for your team. So, I don't know. I don't get too worked up about really anything on a one-game basis, and this is no exception to that. I think, basically, the big things you want to look at are, Is someone hurt now who didn't used to be hurt? I think that's the big thing you want to zoom in on when you're dealing with the NFL. And if we don't have news like that, then I'm not going to be overly concerned.
Yeah, I think I generally agree. It's not a great look when you just go out there and can't beat probably a team that you should beat. And it's a Thursday night game and it's on the road. And I don't know, these things.
Sure, but you're just as good as football as you were 4 days ago, right? So
It sure seems like you should be. I can't understand like the complete overreaction here, but I don't know. It just is what it is. All right, we're gonna get into going through these game by game breakdown, going through the injury news that we can expect going into Sunday. Not a ton of stuff hanging out there at this point, but there's gonna be some stuff that we're going to want to nod to as we get going, and we'll break these down and kind of spend some more time on some games than others, as you'll see, because the first game we can start off with is Buffalo and Miami, 40 point over under. Miami is a 3.5 point favorite. I want to possibly, maybe LeSean McCoy. Like, the Buffalo is coming off a win. McCoy did still touch the ball a decent amount last week. And on the Miami side, guys like Frank Gore still coming cheap. But I don't know. What do you see from this game? It's probably the least exciting of the entire group.
Yeah, I think generally it's going to be a hard skip for cash game purposes. And I think you will see some value. I mean, it's funny. People wanted to speculate on this Miami wide receiver situation last week, and they got their rear ends handed to them, Doug. Parker, Amendola were both players that people dabbled with, and to a man, they burned you. Kenny Stills, you'd think that if Parker and Amendola have 3 total targets, that maybe Kenny Stills would be more involved. He had 4 targets and 1 catch, so I don't know. Miami's just not an exciting team for me, and just forget about Buffalo. I'm basically out. I will say that for McCoy's purposes, we looked at him briefly for last week, just because we were like, is there any plan in Buffalo besides just giving LeSean McCoy the ball? He did touch the ball 18 times against a pretty tough Jacksonville defense. So going up against a significantly worse defense here in Miami could be meaningful.
Yeah, clearly the least exciting game of the slate. I don't think we need to spend a ton of time on this one. Next one up, Cleveland goes in and plays Houston. Houston 5.5 point favorites here. We nodded to Nick Chubb a little bit yesterday in terms of like a cash game play, but maybe we expand on it for 2 seconds here on where we land with Chubb based on the usage he's gotten, knowing that he's an underdog here to the Texans. But it really kind of hasn't mattered for him on a week-to-week basis in terms of where, how much they've just wanted to use him both in the running, specifically in the running game, and to some degree in the passing game. Is that enough to overcome the fact that this is not an ideal matchup for the Browns?
Yeah, I mean, it's not an ideal matchup, but being 6-point underdogs is certainly not going to dissuade Cleveland from trying to establish the run. Houston, notably, top 5 team in terms of yards per attempt on the ground this season, so it really is a bad matchup. But if you think Chubb's still going to get 20 carries or whatever, and you think he's going to be the plan when they get down and close, Vegas does see the Browns scoring a few points. So I think you could you could definitely consider. I mean, I think he was a 25% play last week. He was excellent on those 31 touches against Cincinnati. Cincinnati's a worse run defense, but I think, well, I can't recall what the spread was in that game now off the top of my head, but yeah, I still think Chubb playable, but not where I'll probably land for cash games.
Lamar Miller was one of the better running back plays of the week last week. Only had to carry the ball 12 times, but got 162 yards and a touchdown. One was like a huge 90-yard run where I saw a thing where he hit like the top speed of any NFL player last week. It's funny about that list because like Vernon Davis was on the list too. Maybe something just means most of these guys can hit top speeds if they just are running downfield with no one in front of them. So
yeah, just basically running a 100-yard dash.
Exactly, right. So like the Vernon Davis of the world end up becoming, you know, top speed kind of guys. But Lamar Miller is a guy that they will give the ball from time to time. This is kind of the situation we're looking for. A home favorite right around that 5.5 to 6 is kind of where we want to land in getting a lot more safety from running backs. Where do you land here with Lamar Miller? He's still coming very cheap, especially on DraftKings.
Yeah, 4,600 on DraftKings. I mean, you like to see that, but 13 touches last week. You're basically just, and you're not, like, if you look at Lamar Miller's historical track record, you don't just count on him for breaking off huge 97-yard runs, really, right? So I think given that he had 13 touches in a game where his team was ahead and heavily incentivized to give him the ball, I just assume not do it.
What about Baker? He's been very good over the last couple weeks. 258 yards and 4 touchdowns last week against Cincinnati. 216 and 3 touches plus tacked on 20 rushing yards. Has had 26 and 23 FanDuel points over the last two. And actually had a 300-yard game against KC 3 games ago. Seems like he's improving. Seems like they're getting more comfortable in the offense. Has definitely seen a change since they fired Hugh Jackson and moved the offense into just a new sort of like just new scheme. Can you find some GBP upside on a guy like him? I don't feel like he'll have very high ownership.
Nah, I probably won't touch him. I mean, you mentioned that he's become more efficient with the change of the guard there, but he also has been getting the ball in his hands less, averaging 23 attempts in the last two games that he played. I don't see a ton of upside coming from that. I mean, he's relatively cheap. He's not that cheap on FanDuel, by the way. He's the same price as like Lamar Jackson or Jameis Winston, and I just don't think he's in the same tier as those guys. So, yeah, you'll get separation from the field on it, and maybe there's still that 40-pass game in there somewhere, but it hasn't happened recently.
Deshaun Watson's another one. We have him as the 6th overall projected quarterback this week. The Cleveland defense is a pretty good one on the season. They rank top 10 in DVOA. They're a little bit better against the pass than they are against they're a lot better against the pass than they are against the rush. 25th against the rush, 4th against the pass. Deshaun's a guy that we've kind of trended away from in recent weeks, mostly because, I mean, do we see ever a return to a high volume throwing? Like he's thrown 24 or less passes in 5 forever. Straight weeks. I mean, are we ever going to see? He's had big rushing games, a 70-yard rushing game last week, 40 yards 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago. Do you think we ever see him come back to a volume passer, or are we just kind of stuck? Because he was 40 attempts per week on lock, and then that kind of just disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to take the last 6 week samples, and you're going to stick with that. And I think you like to see the carries can flash themselves up from time to time. You know, there's tournament upside, but I'm not playing Watson for cash by any stretch.
Moving into Tampa Bay, Carolina goes in to play Tampa Bay, 55 over-under, easily the highest of the main slate. No, I take that back. Detroit, LA and Detroit have a 55 over-under too. At Kansas City, 56, so I'm going to take that back. But I will say the difference there is that those other games, the points are all coming from LA and Kansas City. This one is a much thinner spread, 3.5-point road favorites for the Panthers. We talked about Newton and but more about McCaffrey last week, and then I was on another podcast yesterday, and I was thinking, I don't know, I'm starting to like talk myself into the idea of just a cash game stack of just Newton and McCaffrey, and feeling like you're getting all of the offensive production. Famous last words.
Classic Doug all thing the to say, by the way.
What's that?
It's just such a classic Dougism, and then we get the flash to 10 minutes in, you're like, if I told you the Carolina had 2 rushing touchdowns.
Well, that actually did happen that one week, which was crazy.
I know, like, but I'm just saying.
I feel like that was the complete and utter outlier. It's the only time, and by the way, that was the only time it happened all season. These guys have still accounted for like
every single
touchdown.
The Colts had 3 tight end passing.
You know what, though? I'm sticking by it. I know it's hyperbole or whatever, and I'm sticking with it because this is a team, they have a huge, they're playing easily the best matchup, I think, of the week. At Tampa Bay, we've seen what they've done against both the run and the pass this season. They're second to last in DVOA. Again, on defense this season. But, I mean, doesn't it feel like there's such a high floor with that Newton-McCaffrey stack? Maybe you pay a little bit of a premium on both, but it just strikes me as the exact matchup to do it in.
No, I do like it. For all my teasing here, I think that it is actually just a really excellent play. I think McCaffrey in particular really should be chalk here. He was highly owned against Tampa Bay the last time they played. He's been excellent recently. People seem to be picking these big name running backs based on matchup. Like we saw Barkley have the overwhelming ownership last week. But the fact that McCaffrey was getting it done anyway just leads me to believe that he'll be the highest owned of those big money guys. He's also the highest or the one big money guy in a good matchup with a game with a relatively tight point spread. Because you have Hunt in a good matchup, but it's like a 16-point spread or whatever. So, yeah, McCaffrey all in on Newton. I do think you'll see significant ownership, even if for me it still feels a little weird because he's in kind of that middle range between the Winston Jackson group and the Mahomes group. So, yeah, I could see people playing him, though. I mean, he'll have, I would guess, at least 20% ownership for cash on FanDuel, if not higher.
Yeah, we said yesterday, Mullins got pretty high cash game ownership last week, and because it's Tampa Bay. That's the only reason. There wasn't a lot of other reasons to kind of roll a guy like that out.
And Mullins was like 40% or something crazy. Yeah.
Exactly. And so I think you just, and it makes sense, though.
He was cheap, too, though. Yeah.
You stare down this matchup against against Tampa Bay, and all of a sudden you like it. I know when you lock those two, for our purposes, at least it's a little easier on FanDuel, but when you lock those two into cash games, Newton and McCaffrey, you don't have to make too many other concessions. You're still getting guys like Aaron Jones and Cooks and Woods and some other, and just, I don't know, high floor kind of players. So I think this will be one discussion we have. Because the other guy, when you don't do that, the guy that is in our system right now is Jameis. Now, we talked about him at length on the Cash Game Pod yesterday, so I don't think we need to go totally back into that. But, you know, we see Winston here as upside play for sure, even maybe a high floor play. And then, I don't know, what are your GPP thoughts on the rest of the guys? DeSean Jackson has a thumb injury. It's unclear if he's going to play right now. They do have Evans. They still have Cameron Brate, caught a touchdown last week. Peyton Barber's still a guy they give the ball to a lot. Give me some thoughts here on Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I think Jackson, if he plays, is actually pretty interesting. He's gotten the targets in the last three games. He hasn't really turned him in a whole heck of a lot, but you know he has that explosive playmaking ability, and especially if you wanted to triple stack like Winston, Evans, and Jackson, that seems like a direction you could potentially think about. I think Evans, you know, he's still showing that huge big playmaking ability and also just a little bit more consistency around conversion in the last couple of weeks. Which you like to see too. So yeah, I mean, I think both sides of this game, basically every player, we haven't even mentioned DJ Moore. I know we broke him down in the Cash Game podcast, but yeah, there's just, to a man, if you're going to be involved in this game, you probably have good big tournament upside.
I'm ticking, so two injury news on this game. So I ticked down DJ Moore a little bit because Devin Funchess was a full participant in practice on Thursday. And that, I think, does cut in just enough to Moore's target share to probably maybe possibly take him out of the cash game discussion.
Well, and that's fine. I think you can make a reasonable case that he's not a lock cash game play the way he was if Funchess is out. But like, again, for big tournaments, you're still going to consider.
For sure. Where I might even actually take DeSean Jackson out of the big tournament upside is that the injury for him is a thumb injury and he's wearing a cast on his thumb. And so if it's going to be just a straight up just pass catching issue. Now, it'd be interesting if like, he played with a cast on his thumb and was still played. So this is a very confusing injury piece of news for me because it's the exact thing you actually don't want your wide receiver to have a problem with. And if he were to play, I'm not sure how he'd be anything more than a decoy if he just simply can't catch passes. So the DeSean Jackson one, because I think actually if he doesn't play, it would open up possibly some more targets for Evans probably. But then lower down the chain, Humphreys, Godwin, and Brate would probably see a slightly higher target share. So keep an eye on the DeSean Jackson news. And I just hate that it's a thumb injury because for obvious reasons I don't need to continue explaining. All right. Baltimore goes in and plays Atlanta, 48 over under in this one. Atlanta just slight home favorites at 1.5. I mentioned Tampa Bay as being a bottom defense. Atlanta is actually the bottom defense in terms of DVOA. They rank dead last overall in the season, 29th against the pass, 31st against the rush. How much do we want to translate that issue stopping the run when we are looking at the floor of Lamar Jackson and Gus Edwards? Because in this case, it really kind of probably does matter for Lamar Jackson, where it doesn't matter for pocket passers. But if they're already so bad at stopping the run, is like a Lamar Jackson, Gus Edwards stack in play here, you're getting them for significantly cheaper than you're getting Newton and McCaffrey.
Yeah, I think this will be a popular cash game stack and for big tournaments too. I think you can also just pick one of them. Neither is really dependent upon the other, but chances are good if one is having a good game, then the other one will too. I will say for big tournaments, you know, when you're pairing a quarterback and a running back, but that both get their points on the ground, that doesn't really synergize very well for big tournaments. Yep. Because you know, like Cam and McCaffrey, like there is a case where all of McCaffrey's touchdowns involve Cam, right? That's probably not the case with Edwards and Jackson. So yeah, both good plays. Both will see significant cash game ownership. I like both here in a really excellent matchup. I will say with Jackson, kind of the classic naked quarterback for big tournaments, because basically no receiver has sustained any production with him behind center. So
yeah, and that's why you really can't play Edwards on DraftKings either. The guy doesn't ever catch a ball. And if you're just going to take a full zero out of your running back in the passing game, where PPR is so important on DraftKings, I really don't think it's just a bad play. Yeah, now 6400, if he's going to touch the ball 23 times on FanDuel, where you're only, it's a half point PPR, you're not nearly as worried about it over there. So I just want to make the distinction about where I think Edwards, is a play. I'm having a little trouble catching my breath here when I talk about Gus Edwards. On the Atlanta side, one guy that actually sort of started creeping into our model after we published the previous cash game article was Julio Jones. It's drawing out this matchup. It's drawing out the matchup against the Baltimore to be slightly better than I think I thought it was going to be on the surface. And right now, Jones is the third overall. He's the third overall projected wide receiver, Tyreek Hill, and that's going to be contingent on Sammy Watkins news, then Davante Adams, then Julio Jones. Where do you land with Julio in this game? Good conditions, I think, which starts to matter this time of year when it gets toward the winter. Against a Baltimore defense that's okay, and it really does kind of like the cornerback matchup, because how close would he be getting to cash game viability for you?
I'm happy to play Julio in cash game right now, honestly. Six straight weeks with six or more catches and 100 or more yards, touchdown to three of those weeks. Seems to have a really high floor. You know, we've been a little bit concerned with the Falcons, like, you know, picking out wide receivers on their offense, because at least in the last couple of years, they've tended to lean on the ground when they get down and close. But Julio has been just right back at it this season. I mean, he's probably, I would say from a week-to-week basis, he's the wide receiver for me that I'm the most confident in his floor. So I think if you're just trying to analyze floor among those big money guys, like there's a scenario where the Chiefs get out and running and Hill just isn't even a part of things. I think you can argue the same thing for the Packers as well with the emergence of Aaron Jones. But it seems like for the Falcons, especially with how tough the Ravens are on the run, that he will be involved in the offensive attack almost no matter what happens.
Keep an eye on Calvin Ridley's injury news here. He was limited in practice. He has dealt with some injury issues so far this season. Not because I'm all that interested in Calvin Ridley outside of a GPP dart. He can get out-snapped by Mohamed Sanu, and still he's clearly the better, just in terms of overall fantasy production, receiver, because he's got such big game ability in him. But if you were to sit, you would definitely see targets open up for guys like Sanu and guys like Jones. Maybe something from the running game, but I don't think all that much. So keep an eye on the Calvin Ridley piece. Could end up opening up some if for some reason he were to sit. Can we just agree that for basketball and for DC football, that if you're from a state and you all play in the same city, that like we're either going to call it all like the Indiana Colts or just the Indianapolis Pacers or like whatever it is, because vacillating between the city and the state, having to do multiple cop hats about sports, it's just not fair. I just completely triggered by this. Like, just everyone just get together, decide, are you going to call it by the city or the state? Just decide and just make it uniform, because I do this too often where I start by saying Indiana or Indianapolis.
Yeah, you seem kind of triggered, dude.
The Colts go in and play the Jags. Jags are a complete and utter mess. Blake Bortles is benched for Cody Kessler. Leonard Fournette is suspended, so he's out this week. The team is in a death spiral. Yet they're still only 4-point underdogs to the Colts coming in here, probably just on the back of the defense. I guess we start on that side. Is there anything? I mean, how much do you put in the stock of just like grabbing some of these very cheap quarterbacks, like a guy like Kessler? Doesn't have a ton of weapons on him, but now there might be. Is there value for guys like Hyde or Yeldon or Kessler that are all coming very cheap because they just took the two of the main cogs of their offense? Man, I hate to say that, because cogs make it sound like they're actually an efficient machine. They took two of their biggest guys that touch the ball.
Even bad machines have cogs, dude, to be fair. I think I like Carlos Hyde, man. $5,000, like that's really, really cheap. And Jacksonville hasn't really deployed him in the same way that Cleveland did, and they haven't really used him in the same way that they've used, you know, even Yeldon in the past. But we just don't really have a lot of precedent now for both Hyde being on this team and Fournette being out. And the fact that he managed to secure 10 carries last game when Fournette had 18 and 3 targets leads me to believe that he is probably the clear number one back. The real question is whether he'll be a 2-down or a 3-down back, though, because, you know, even while Fournette's been solid, Yeldon has still been involved in, you know, 3 targets, 4 targets, 6, 9 targets a game. So I think you'd want to I think you can play him at 5,000 on FanDuel. I do. I think you can play him for cash, but you are potentially taking on some level of risk there.
Oh man, I hear the thought process, and that's just like, to me, it's just the Jazz.
And you're just
going to
ignore it, and you're going to say, yeah, but still, basically.
I'm just going to say, yeah, but still, with a reason. This team is just so awful. I'm actually a little surprised about this line based on where, like, just this offense just looks. Just this, I don't even know how they're going to score. Anyway, couple notes here.
Score
on the Colts.
Two words, buddy. Carlos Hyde. That's how they're going to score.
Good luck. Have fun with that. That is not a guy I will come close to touching. Colts are, like I said, 4-point road favorites here. Been very good. Andrew Luck has come fully back from the surgery. There's no doubt about it now. The year that he sat out, it's kind of a long forgotten, and the way the Colts are playing right now and how efficient he's been this season. There was some injury news in their wide receiver and tight end core. T.Y. Hilton had sat out, but he was a full participant in practice yesterday. And then all the tight ends sat out yesterday out of practice. Was going to call some question about Eric Ebron, but then I kind of figured maybe they just all like went out and got wasted and were too hungover to practice as a group, and that's why they all sat out. Now they're all fully back practicing today. We talked about Ebron at length as probably a chalk cash game play. But what about Hilton? I actually don't mind taking a stab at Hilton here, like, just because he's coming very cheap on DraftKings. We've seen some high target upside, and no one's going to play him because of the matchup with Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, I thought about writing up Hilton. You love to see the targets ticking upward. Jack Doyle, obviously that benefits Ebron the most, but it probably benefits everyone a little bit too. Just like anytime you lose a significant part of the passing game, that's, you know, you tend not to see those translate directly into one other person. So I think I like Hilton. I think he's probably a little too expensive for my taste on FanDuel. You mentioned the tough matchup with Ramsey. That is going to definitely sully my opinion of him a little bit. But yeah, 6,000 on DraftKings, you could do a heck of a lot worse. I mean, that's like, just by contrast, he's 300 more expensive than Galladay on FanDuel. He's 700 less than him on DraftKings. He's basically the same price as Brandon Cooks on FanDuel. He's 1,000 less than Cooks on DraftKings. So you're seeing really significant savings for a guy who probably has similar upside to those guys. Could he get shut down? Sure. It's worth noting that it is a groin injury, and you know that can take a half a step off your 40 time and stuff like that. But yeah, I think Hilton, all in all, represents enough of a value that you wouldn't just give up on him on DraftKings based on the matchup.
And here's the other thing too. Jalen Ramsey has not practiced all this week. I was just actually, while you were talking, I thought I'd seen a note on this, and I just confirmed it. He is not practiced yet. We'll see what happens today at Friday's practice. He showed up at practice yesterday and didn't practice. So if he were to sit out, we would have to really bump up Hilton's target share, I think. I think that would take off the multiplier that he's getting pretty big downgrade of having shadow coverage from one of the better cornerbacks in the league. Going to the switch off would probably end up ticking him up. And I think at that point, if that was the case, 6,000 DraftKings actually would start coming in to that cash game ownership. So, you know, sometimes we don't always pay attention to defensive guys when it comes to individual defensive guys when it comes to DFS, because there are some big difference makers. You know, you lose a big offensive lineman, guys like this. But for the most part, you don't really spend too much time thinking about it. But a guy like Jalen Ramsey would make T.Y. Hilton look a lot better if you were to sit. Mm-hmm. So keep an eye on that news. Arizona goes in and plays Green Bay. Green Bay 14-point favorites. That seems crazy to me that they're 14-point favorites. Green Bay, the Packers just don't seem all that good. Like, I get that the Cardinals aren't that good. This line, I don't spend a ton of time on just betting lines in general for NFL because, you know, that's more NBA when we kind of roll our betting strategies. But 14 just strikes me, one, as like a totally Aaron Rodgers-y kind of publicly line. And we talked about Aaron Jones as a play here yesterday. What are your thoughts on Rodgers? Does not look anything close to what we've seen in the past. And I don't know, could we see a resurgence against an Arizona team that Vegas sure thinks is going to get totally blown out here?
Yeah, I think you might just be generally underrating how terrible the Cardinals are. Green Bay has been basically league average this season, minus 3-point differential. The Cardinals have been the very worst team in the NFC, and they're 2 points away from being the worst team in the NFL in terms of overall point differential. So they're a truly, truly awful team. Now, you could argue that maybe they've gotten better since changing off the offensive scheme a little bit midway through the season, but I still think that line is, like, you know, it's on the high end. It is a home game for Green Bay here, Arizona traveling into the cold. Like, I think there's enough narrative around it. I think if I were a betting man when it came to the NFL, I'd probably just take the points, but I still think it reflects the reality, which is that Green Bay is and should be heavily favored here. I do like Aaron Jones. You talked me into that play. I think he's a very, very solid option. I also think there's room for Davante Adams, if not in cash, just because, you know, I'm just not sure that's how you're going to be spending up in cash this week. Certainly for big tournaments there too.
Jones is basically a lock cash game running back for me this week. At both sites, I think that he is just has not been fully price corrected for the way the Packers want to use him. Big home favorite here. He is, I know it's maybe a little bit easier on FanDuel at 76, 67 on DraftKings. Still seems like that is just a guy I kind of want to start prioritizing in his price tier. And you mentioned Davante Adams. What about the Arizona side? I mean, there's been times where we've taken a stab at David Johnson, times we've taken a stab at Larry Fitzgerald, maybe in a game where it looks like they're going to be coming back. Is there enough usage in the offense for these guys? Again, like Green Bay has a negative point differential on the season. They're not, I know that they're not minus 138 like the Cardinals, which is, you know, this is pretty damn bad. But this is a bottom third defense on the season, 23rd DVOA against the rush, 17th against the pass. There are no great shakes on D. Is there, I mean, if we're going to start Jones or Adams, can you see a correlation play with maybe some upside on the Cardinals guys?
It would have been Fitzgerald until we saw the two target week out of him last week. So I just really rather not. I think David Johnson, kind of interesting. He still had 20 looks last week after 28 and 20 and 30 the week before that. He's still relatively inexpensive based on what we know his upside is. And I think if the Cardinals are going to stay in it, it's going to be because of explosive David Johnson, playmaking ability. So yeah, I think you can play David Johnson. I'm not really personally interested in any of these other pieces, though.
Yeah, I am not either. Maybe there's a cheap Green Bay wide receiver you want to get, Scalding or Brown or one of these guys, and I don't know. It doesn't seem – I'm kind of mostly just focused on the Aaron Jones piece of this game, and I love it for cash, and I actually think there's plenty of GPP upside for him as well. All right, let's keep moving. Chicago goes in into New York. They're a four-point road favorite against the Giants. The defense has been unbelievable. The line didn't barely moved on Thanksgiving Day when Mitch Trubisky was ruled out and the Chase Daniel. That Vegas didn't see that as anything more than a lateral move for the Chicago offense. I'm not sure that what that says about your franchise quarterback, or if it's just a good sign that your team is just a stacked team in general and it kind of doesn't matter who is back there. But they are favorites here, and Trubisky is going to sit out again. I mean, from a DFS perspective, are we mostly just targeting the Chicago defense here? I mean, Jordan Howard, the Giants defense has really struggled, especially to stop the pass, more to stop the pass this season. Where do you fall on the Bears side of this? And I'm going to struggle to find anything that I like on the Giants side.
Yeah, I might struggle to find anything I really like on the Bears side either, to be honest. I mean, yeah, we've seen flashes from this offense from time to time, but I don't know. I like it. There's just a lot of good players that you can play this week. It's an absolutely packed main slate. The Bears have been kind of coming and going offensively all season. I mean, not to say that none of these guys can't have upside in the right spot, Tarik Cohen or whoever is your player du jour on the Bears, but I don't know. This is not a game that immediately draws my eye by any stretch. I think actually the other way, taking Giants like Saquon Barkley or Odell Beckham, I think that's an interesting way to get pretty decent separation from the field for guys that we know have proven huge upside, but the Bears, it's not for me.
One thing to take notice when you get QB switches to see what targets maybe went a little bit different than they'd gone from the previous guy, because we've seen in the past the new quarterbacks will just, you know, with whatever the way they like to have their wide receivers run routes, whatever they feel comfortable throwing, you do like to see, oh, was there a target redistribution on from the new quarterback? Last week with Chase Daniel under center, Cohen led with 8 targets. Taylor Gabriel had 8 targets, and he ended up with 7 for 49. He's always going to be these quick kind of slant kind of things. And then Trey Burton had 7 targets for a tight end position that's just traditionally very tough to fill anyway. So if that target share strikes me as we are not taking any chances, like those are the three guys that are going to catch the ball the closest to the line as possible, maybe another week gets it to feeling more comfortable, we're going to take shots with Anthony Miller and Allen Robinson down the field. But I don't know, 6 or 7 targets for Trey Burton, 6 or 7 targets, 8 targets for Taylor Gabriel. Those guys are coming cheap enough in PPR that I think you can maybe talk yourself into it. Not tons of upside, but anyway, just something to keep an eye on with new quarterbacks. The Barkley Odell thing, I don't know. The Bears defense is so good. They're not going to have any ownership, so you like it. You like that standpoint, and I'm struggling to.
Yeah, again, I think we spent a long time on a game that will probably have like 5% total ownership even across GPPs. So
combined, I was going to ask you if it was combined, like it would just be the 5% combined among all the players. All right, Rams.
That's what I'm saying. 5%. Like if you add up the ownership of all these guys, it's going to be very, very low.
Rams 10-point road favorites against the Lions, 55 over under. You know, obviously they're still without Cooper Kupp for the rest of the season. Right now our system kind of wants to stack Cooks and Woods together in cash. At least on FanDuel, it's 78 and 7,300. Do you see can you see a case to be made for just grabbing those two guys in what we know is a pretty prolific passing offense? It kind of strikes me as weird that it's happening because it's not something we typically see, especially from two wide receivers in this price point. And I'm wondering if you think the floor is high enough to use that as a strategy.
Yeah, I don't know that the floor is high enough, honestly, like especially for a guy like Robert Woods. I think we've been waiting for the Robert Woods breakout week for quite a long time now, and it really hasn't come. We finally saw him see double-digit targets, which is kind of what we would assumed would have happened as a matter of course, and he didn't really do a whole lot with it. And you're on now a pretty significant stretch of time where Woods has been a pretty disappointing fantasy player. You know, he basically had that one huge week against LA in week three, I think it was, and then outside of that, he's kind of dabbled, but there's been at least a question mark about every single game after that, whether it's, you know, just seven targets or just turning his 11 targets into four catches. I think, especially with the emergence of Cooks being just a significantly better option, plays run to Cooks are going for a significant number of more yards than to Woods. He just seems to be flat out better. So I think they're going to start by establishing Cooks, and then Woods will be more of an afterthought. And that, yeah, that's just my general take on it right now.
It'll be interesting to see what the Rams do and how much they want to work to avoid Darius Slay on either of these two guys. Slay will move around enough he's not one of these guys that just inhabits one side of the field and just whoever ends up lining up across him. Now, he also doesn't shadow coverage all that much either. So it'll be interesting to see where they move him around, because Mike Ford and Evan Lawson are significantly, significantly worse than Slay. And you'd be pretty certain that this is something McVay and company have thought about going into this week and just trying to work Cooks and Woods into as much of advantageous coverage as possible. I don't mind it from a floor cash game perspective. I hear you on the conversion. I'm happy that Woods is probably still running most of his routes out of the slot, because I think that will ultimately just yield big results. And I'm with you that it's a little worrisome that it hasn't. What about Gurley? Too expensive this week? We kind of nodded to him in cash games yesterday, but our system has him as the highest overall projected guy by 3 points over Christian McCaffrey, but it ends up just becoming a price play. Would he be a guy you would want to prioritize? Or do you think he just kind of just gets priced out of consideration?
No, yeah, he's playable. I think you're going to probably need a little bit more value to crop up before I'm too interested. I think right now, McCaffrey feels like just the right price point for where I'd like to spend up. It's like the same reason why I probably won't wind up playing Mahomes in cash, especially on FanDuel either. It's the best play, great matchup, and you're paying for it. And actually, just the existence of Gurley is another thing that throws cold water on my desire to play any part of the Rams passing attack, because Goff, this is, you know, it's trended up a little bit recently, which is kind of odd since Goff's had fewer weapons, but prior to November, he hadn't thrown for more than 36 times in any single game, and that's just because Gurley's so damn good. So I like Gurley. I think they're now officially in a lot of mouths to feed territory in LA as well, so I think you take on some amount of risk playing any of these guys.
I was actually surprised by this, because he's not a guy that I consider for cash, because he doesn't run at all, and that's really where we typically want to be with cash game running backs. But we do have Goff as the third highest overall projected quarterback on this slate, behind Mahomes and Newton. So that ended up being just a little bit higher because Gurley, a little higher than I thought it would be because of the existence of Gurley and how many touchdowns he's just scored in through the running game. But not a guy that I wanted to go out, roll out there in cash, because I like to have that running floor. But definitely a GPP guy for absolute sure, especially too if you want to pair him maybe going the other way with a guy like Galladay, some piece of this Detroit passing attack. I mean, Galladay is definitely seems like the leader in the clubhouse for target share. They do have a couple of Bruce Ellington still there. If you wanted to pair him the other way and hope that Detroit was maybe just trying to play catch up in this game. All right, let's go through the last 1 o'clock game, Denver and Cincinnati. Cincinnati, another one of these teams, is a full on total disaster mess. Andy Dalton is out for the season now. They're going to bring in Jeff Driscoll. Driscoll didn't look too terrible. I'm actually wondering your thoughts on him, because he is so cheap on DraftKings. He's just one of these, like, when we're getting into the just punt play sort of territory of quarterbacks and what kind of bad quarterback we're willing to risk on a week-to-week basis to pay the absolute minimum for the position. Because last week he went 17 for 29, 155 yards. He also ran ran for 35 yards in this previous game.
Hold on a second. So you're giving me last game's passing, but the previous game's running? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you got it. You hear where I'm going on this one. So anyway, I guess mostly my question is, at what point can you stomach the basement price for a quarterback. Like 4,500, is this a situation where you could even consider it? Because obviously the 4,500 on DraftKings is going to allow you to just spend up every single other position. Is it something you can stomach, or just like hell no kind of territory?
I'd really rather not, just to be honest with you. I think the passing looks pretty bad on him, and the fantasy totals are significantly buoyed by the fact that he happened to punch the ball into the end zone. I think the fact that they have Mixon here means that, and Mixon just being like a pretty solid short yardage back as it is, leads me to believe that they'll just give the ball to him when they get close. So, nah, I don't need any Driscoll shares this week, I don't think. I mean, I guess I'd have to look more closely. Ultimately, I, as always, will just trust the numbers, but eyeball test, it doesn't pass right now.
They could get AJ Green back this week. He was a limited participant in practice. That's trending the right way, considering he's been out for multiple weeks. That would make their offense better, I mean, at least from a wide receiver core, because the what they were throwing out, like the Alex Erickson, Cody Corris, the world or whatever, up to AJ Green is about as big a change as you're going to get from one wide receiver to the next one in terms of replacement level. So I guess that would increase what you could expect overall from their offense, and it's just hard to trust any of the wide receiver options here with a brand new quarterback that's barely played. Again, they're a mess. What about Denver? Philip Lindsay continues to just get off yards in chunks, and is it still just too much of a timeshare with Freeman? I think there's upside from a GPP perspective, but I just get so worried about these RBPC kind of teams.
Yeah, he's expensive too now. Lindsay's up to 7,000. His duo mate is still there. He touched the ball 14 times last week. I'm not going to do it.
All right, moving into the 4 o'clock games, Jets go in and play Tennessee. Tennessee coming off that game where Marcus Mariota basically couldn't throw an incomplete pass, and they still lost by a decent amount, which was just like one of the crazier lines.
It's too bad.
Mariota, the efficiency was there. They're 8-point favorites. 8-point favorites at home is usually where we want to grab some piece of the ground game, too. He's a running quarterback. He works a lot decently enough in the short yardage game too, in terms of passing. And then we have Deion Lewis and Derrick Henry there as well. So 8-point home favorite seems like I want to have some part of this game. And I just so hard to trust anything.
Because I don't feel like I do want any part of this game. I mean, Tennessee, I'm not going to play either of these running backs in what looks like it's just straight up timeshare. I mean, I think Lewis touched the ball more, but he was like pretty awful on his carries, and Henry actually wound up out carrying him in this game, and Henry had 3 targets of his own too, and the running game just looks so abysmal that I don't know. I mean, certainly again, for big tournaments, sure, you can catch lightning in a bottle here if you happen to guess right, but I don't picture myself being a part of that. And on the passing side, Mariota was really good, but he didn't throw the ball very many times, and you saw guys like Corey Davis get 4 targets, Tajay Sharp 7 targets, still very cheap, both of those guys, but you're gonna have to guess right once again. And for as efficient as Mariota was, he wasn't really airing the ball out. So you have to think that limits the upside on some level too.
Yeah, I don't mind the Titans' defense here. I still think the Jets' offense is garbage enough between like what they're throwing out there in the passing game and in terms of the running game too. They have one of the lowest implied totals of the week. A lot of these defenses just end up becoming sort of the same. They're all priced pretty similarly. There's a lot of them that are just in good spots, like Rams, Chiefs, Titans, even like New England, which we're going to talk about here next, is coming cheap. I don't know. It's hard to distinguish between some of the defensive teams, at least for me this week. All right, Kansas City goes in and plays Oakland, 15.5-point favorites right now, 56 over-under. We talked about Kareem Hunt as a high upside play, maybe just probably even a high floor play going on the road in Oakland. But we also nodded to the fact that his targets and his running back usage has really not even been in the top 10 in terms of overall guys that touch the ball in the NFL this year. The Sammy Watkins still hasn't practiced. Give me your quick thoughts here on Kansas City. We did cover a lot of these guys in the cash game pod.
Yeah, we went to this at length. I mean, I think if Hunt showed up in my lineups, I wouldn't cross him out. I definitely don't like his usage as much as someone like McCaffrey is going into this week. So I think in a world where I can't play 2 really expensive running backs, I just probably won't wind up with Kareem Hunt in cash. That being said, if you have a lineup you like that has McCaffrey, sure, swap in Hunt and see what happens. Tyreek Hill, if Watkins is out, I still remain pretty interested in him. And I'm curious to know, like, if you have a way you're leaning between him and Julio Jones, because certainly Jones has been just the peak of consistency this season, but Nolan's really flashed as much upside on a week-to-week basis as Hill has recently. So Hill or Jones with a gun to your head?
No Watkins, it's Hill for me. I think that his targets and his upside are just way better. The matchup's better. The Oakland's terrible. The way they will use him, even just in some of the pieces of the running game on some of these like jet sweep kind of stuff, that matters for him. Anytime, removing Watkins takes away some or redistributes targets almost directly to Hill. Like, I just, like, there's no other way to put it. Like, his targets spike when Watkins doesn't play, and he's the primary beneficiary of Watkins not playing. I think if and it really doesn't look like Watkins is going to play. He still didn't practice yesterday. The guy hasn't practiced in weeks, even with the bye. So I don't know at this point why they would even push it to get him to play if he was only able to practice twice or something like that. So I don't think he's going to play. I mean, Tyreek Hill is just, from a fantasy perspective, this guy, I think I can't remember if we talked about this in the Fantasy Pros podcast or on ours, but he has 21 more fantasy points this season than the next closest guy on like 20 less targets or something like that. Like, it's insane how little he needs to touch the ball to hit top end upside. So anytime you can get that target share up to like 10, he's almost a lock for me on both sides. I just think he's a lock.
All right.
Almost definitely on FanDuel with the way you can kind of, he's only 8,400 over there on the prices. You can get enough kind of cheaper running backs, I think. I just love him. I think he just has the highest upside of really almost any player this week. So, yeah, love Tyreek Hill. The Raiders are the exact opposite. They don't have one guy on the team that I'm interested in. It's pretty amazing, actually. They are just so bad. I just can't even. It's like one of these things like, oh, Oakland's got a bunch of wide receivers. They got a bunch of wide receivers hurt. That's going to redistribute some targets. Nah, not really. They all stink. Every single guy stinks to a man, except for maybe Jared Cook. Like, that's about the only guy that you can get interested in. 15
and still six
favorites.
Targets last week. Like, just not.
I guess him. Loser. Whatever. They're losers. Okay. San Francisco goes in and plays Seattle. Seattle 10-point favorites here this week over the Niners. That's, again, where we want to maybe think about these running backs. Have you seen enough usage out of Chris Carson to warrant maybe him as a play here? He did outsnap. I'm just going to look real quick. He outsnapped Mike Davis 32-18 last week. 16 carries, 55 yards, and a touchdown. Also did have a target in the passing game. How close would he, 10-point favorite, home favorite, this is right in that zone, is Chris Carson one of these cash game guys that maybe we didn't talk about yesterday?
No, I'd rather not. Again, two down back. You listed those snaps, but that's not like really out-snapping someone that hard for a guy right. Who's essentially a mid-range price running back. I think we have also seen that Seattle will just change their mind sometimes, right? Like, Carson has kind of been the guy, and then maybe he'll get the 8 carries, and I don't trust it. So I will not be playing him in my cash games now.
Yep, 16 carries and 17 carries the last two, and then a 0 and an 8 and a 25 and a 14. It's just all over the place. They just haven't fully – when it seems like they've fully committed to a guy, all of a sudden they have it. So these teams that become – you start to distrust over the course of a season usually don't do a lot outside of just injuries to everybody else. Like, everyone else got hit by a bus and Chris Carson's the only guy left. Then I think you start trusting it. And even then, it's like that's when one of these other random guys kind of shows up. San Francisco side – people like to play Matt Breida last week. People like to play Mullins last week. Breida was limited in practice this week. There's just such huge underdogs here. Is there a reason to turn back to these guys, or is the matchup really not dictated?
Yeah, I think the matchup probably excludes it from my consideration. I do think Breida, you know, he impressed me on some level because he just continues to be so good on a per-touch basis that it's hard to ignore his upside. And Seattle, quietly this season, terrible running defense. They've been... I think it's an overall, were they dead last? Yeah, they're dead last in terms of overall yards per carry allowed. And that's all well and good. The real issue, though, is like how often are the 49ers going to really be in position to run the ball? And, you know, last week in a better matchup against Tampa Bay, at least in terms of the game potentially staying close, we saw Breida go out there and touch the ball 17 times. I think you have to guess that there are going to be fewer running back touches to go around, and Breida's price just hasn't changed. So still an upside play, still just electric on a per-touch basis, but we just really haven't seen him unleashed for that full 25-carry game that you'd really like to see to be excited about it, I think.
All right, final game. New England hosts the Vikings. New England's a 5-point home favorite with a 50 over-under. We'll start on that side of the ball. They did get Gronk back last week. They ran Sony Michel a lot. Sony Michel ran 21 times, scored a touchdown, 133 yards. Did actually catch a couple passes as well. Where does he rank in terms of like how New England has wanted to use him when he's been fully healthy? They are getting Rex Burkhead back this week, though there's some speculation that he's going to be very lightly used because he's been on the IR for so long. But Michel, 21 carries. I mean, that's not an insignificant amount. They are slight home favorites here in a prolific offense. Could you see him kind of touching this kind of target share, this kind of usage again?
Yeah, I could. I think Michel is probably, like what we saw out of him last week is probably, I mean, who knows about the touchdown, but it probably implies the general plan right now, which is to give him the ball around 20 times a game, and he's pretty effective when he does touch the ball. So yeah, I think he's a good option. You know, you're not paying for it, which is always the pain in the ass. Like, now that we know it's part of the plan to give him the ball, he's a little bit more expensive. And Minnesota, they've been really tough. I mean, they're 3.7 yards per attempt allowed on the ground this year. That's effectively third. That makes them the third worst matchup for opposing running backs by that metric. So, yeah, can't say I'm too over the moon about it, but yeah, definitely a guy who probably has a reasonable floor.
Right now, Diggs and Thielen are both questionable, but it looks like both expect to play. We've seen in the past, New England, if a team has one great wide receiver, what they'll do is they'll double team that guy and then just shadow coverage their better cornerback with on like the lesser guy, and then really try to just shut down all avenues of the passing game. Going to be very tough to do that with this Minnesota team, just because Thielen and Diggs are both so good. Thielen's a guy that was looking at like almost historic levels of target share to start the season, that has tailed off a little bit in the short term over the last couple weeks, though he had a 12 target game 2 weeks ago, only 9 last week, and 7 and 7 the 2 weeks before. I mean, are we starting to become more bearish on his overall target share, or is this a guy that maybe could jump back up into like the consistent 12 kind of looks against the New England defense? It's like they're not all that great of a D on the course of the season.
Yeah, I think it's actually a great week to grab some Minnesota guys for big tournaments, because you know it's kind of weird that this has played out this way, but both Diggs and Thielen have both been like just pretty good, even with like all things considered. Like, you know, pretty low ownership, but the target share has been there. The fantasy point production has basically been there too, and I feel like people are sleeping on them, and they're both less expensive than they were earlier this season, in spite of not a whole lot changing. I guess you don't like that they're both listed on the injury report, but certainly plenty of upside to dream on here. And, you know, in a matchup that, like, New England's still totally capable of going those high-flying, just back-and-forth, trading haymakers sort of situations. So for that reason, I'm definitely ready to tap into some Minnesota for big tourneys this week.
One note about before we get out here, about the questionable tags on both. Thielen has practiced, Diggs has not. So just something to keep an eye on for what's going to happen on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, sure.
In terms of, I think, you know, they're both, all questionable tags are not, you know, created the same. And I would say Thielen is questionable with more like probable, and Diggs is like a full-on questionable, because if he hasn't practiced, if he doesn't practice today, then I think we have some real concerns. And last note on that, if Diggs did not play, I don't think we can then translate a 15-target game to Adam Thielen, because we've seen the teams, especially smart ones, the last time Diggs did not play, they said, oh, cool, guess who's going to get double covered every single time? Have fun, Laquon Treadwell, and let's see if you can get it done. Like, it's not going to just be it's not going to be a force the ball to Adam Thielen kind of day. So some teams are like that, and that's not been the case for the Vikings. Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to get out of here. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is the site. DFSR.com/deals will get you started. Go on and over and grab a special podcast deal. It's free for 7 days, and then there's $24.95 a month after that. Optimal lineups for NFL, FanDuel, and DraftKings, NBA as well. A bunch of premium stuff going up each week, and premium chat. So go on over, enjoy a full-on sports experience over at DFSR.com/deals. Buddy, enjoy week 13 in the NFL. Talk to you next week.
Peace.